Good afternoon. Welcome to Use Your Words, Authors Speak. This afternoon we have Beate Sigridaughter, who lives outside of Silver City. She was born in Nuremberg, Germany, and has lived in the United States since you were how old, Beate?
19.
Wow, cool. Yes. And you went to Georgetown University, and you studied with Roger Flint, poetry.
Roland Flint.
Oh, thank you. And publisher of short stories and poetry. And I wish you would just start us off with reading one of your poems.
I would like to read what I have considered my signature poem. Somebody put out an anthology and said, what poem would you like to be remembered by if there's only one? And the poem is called That Day. That day, I woke up wanting to caress the face of things, to whisper, like to live is enough. That day, I rode a fairground ride in celebration, sky blue Denver tilting, and a small boy by my side kissing the whirlwind with laughter. That day, I learned that scientists are working on a bomb that vaporizes human life on impact, finding us by body heat, leaving the more valuable things unharmed, the buildings intact, the roads, the bridges. Not even in my dreams had I been this breathless against my will. For whom will these bridges span? Will the books then read themselves? For whom will roller coasters roll? That day I vowed to quick caress this sweet, quick world without pity, without promise, but with the passion that even a single soldier rolling in the dirt of conflict would be more sacred than a bridge, a drop of oil, an ocean of democracy. There will be no more tears then. Quick now, caress.
Thank you. That was beautiful. Really appreciate your poetry. I know that you've just had a novel published within the last year, and it's called Audrey, A Love Story. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
It's a book that the first draft of it was written about 30 years ago when I did, in fact, fall in love with a woman. And it was a complete surprise to me because I had been brought up, like the majority of us, thinking that that was just against the rules. And the laws have changed since then, and it might be somewhat easier now, but I don't think it's quite as acceptable as, you know, the laws nowadays might indicate. And it's difficult for people to go with the love that's in their heart instead of, you know, especially if it goes against the grain of what society likes to dictate.
Yes, thank you.
Well, I'm here too, Richard Mahler. I'm a co-host of this show, or Rico, as I'm often called. You know, I think when it thing that's interesting to me about your writing is that it spans different genres. So there's poetry, there's novels, there's short stories. And one of the reviewers said that it was her belief that poets write the best prose. And I want to know what your feeling is about that. Your prose is very vivid, it's very passionate, it really explores an inner emotional landscape. So how is it different to write in prose form with that sort of sensibility as opposed to poetry for you?
Well, first of all, poetry was my first love. And when I was in college, of course, I didn't think that poetry would ever make a living for me. And I thought that maybe prose writing would. It hasn't. But there was that dream, and that it still could happen, and it certainly won't with poetry. I think you'd have to be Mary Oliver to make any kind of living, and I'm not. But what happens with poetry is you get to chisel, and you get to revise, and you get to really make every single word count. And what happens with prose, especially of novel length, is a long-term commitment. So you can't you literally can't work on every single word, even though it is recommended that you do. You probably, as a writer, are not going to be that meticulous with it. But if you have the habit of caring, really caring for your words, I do think it carries over into the prose writing.
Mm-hmm. It seems like it's almost like distilling with poetry, every single word and phrase,
right.
And with a novel. And your novels are longer than some people write today. It seems like it's more about culling, you know, whole sections
right.
out,
right.
Or, rather than focusing on the finer word or phrase here and there.
I really liked your novel, Beauty Sleeping, too. That really spoke to me because, again, it's about a woman as an artist and her struggle. What brought you to write that particular book?
The idea was to, in fact, tell a woman's story and to tell a successful woman's story. This woman, in fact, succeeds as an artist, and this is what I wanted to do, and so I figured I would use that novel as a blueprint. And I didn't want to write about a writer because that tends to be kind of a cliche. So I wanted to write about a visual artist, and I took a sculpting class, and I learned a darn lot about how to make sculptures and also things about how to be in the arts in a different way, to be taught something in a different way than just words. I mean, words, I'm in love with words, so mm-hmm. so that's a given. But to be able to look at other ways of expressing yourself.
Right, and I could really recognize myself in that character, and I think many women could, because of her struggles to promote her art, and then, you know, we all put it away and put it in back of us and do that little thing about making a living, and it can get lost.
Right.
So I really appreciate that you're writing that book for all of us. Yeah.
One of the things we haven't talked about is you have a blog, in addition to all the other genres you're working in, writing in a woman's voice. And I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
And that is fairly new. I wanted to do that. I wanted to do something about writing in a woman's voice. In the past, I have taught at college level for small community-type college places. And I haven't been able to find any venue for it here, so I decided I'll do a blog. And what it means to me is I really think that women need to find a voice in this world that's not entirely male-educated. And it can be confusing because we were all pretty much, you know, the last 5,000 years, everything has been written, taught, and otherwise brought to us by male consciousness. And here I'm thinking of, I think Einstein said it, and I'm not sure that I'm going to get the exact quote, but something, you can't solve a problem with the same consciousness that created it. And I do think that we have some problems going on on this beautiful planet of ours. And I do think that women have consciousness that might rescue us if we let it flower.
That's a great, great point. And I think we embrace that by, you know, helping or mentoring other women or young women to speak up and write their stories, and that their stories are worthwhile to be heard. And we need that, the greater story in our history, not just from a male perspective, but from a female perspective as well.
And in some ways, too, you know, have women write their stories or tell their stories but what I'm hoping will at some point happen, that we'll tell these stories not to impress men, but to really tell our stories. What I'm trying to say here, there's an example I can give. I was teaching a girls' power class once, a high school class, when I was living in Denver, and I was teaching dance, and we were doing swing dancing, and we had no partners. There were no boys, no men, and we were just having like a 10 out of 10 time. We were just going at it, and it was beautiful. And suddenly this electrician came in, a man, and things changed. Things just changed. You know, suddenly we had this consciousness that I don't know what everybody was trying to do, but something got lost. And I wanted to be at some point that women can tell their stories their way, and that men can understand what we, you know, because what we've been trained to, even by men, to understand how we think and to get good grades and to make a good impression, we give back exactly what we were told what to think, and it may not be what's really deep inside.
So in that example you're talking about, it was like an unconscious shift in the collective consciousness of that whole room,
yeah,
of young women.
And by the way, the electrician left, and we never got back to where we were before.
Interesting.
It was just a little. We still had fun. It was not like we were all giving up, all of a sudden. Excuse me.
Right.
But it was. There was a shift, and mm-hmm. It was a little bit of a loss.
Right. So we're talking here about remaining and being our true selves, no matter what the environment, no matter what the cost, what it takes, so that we're not in any way restricted in our own consciousness, not to blame the electrician.
Right, right, right.
He didn't know what he was doing.
He just came in.
He was innocent.
Absolutely, right.
Huh.
We have just a minute now to take a little break, and we will be right back. Please stay with us with Beate Sigridaughter. I'm Elise Stewart, and Richard Mahler is here also. We'll be right back in just a few minutes. Welcome back to Use Your Words, Authors Speak. Today, Beate Sigridaughter is with us, and my name is Elise Stewart. And Richard Mahler is here, too. Both of us are interviewing Beate. And Beate, we wondered if you'd read just a little bit of your novel, Audrey, A Love Story.
And I will start with the first page or so. It's called Spring. She came with a painted dragon and cinnamon hearts for Valentine's. Her name was Audrey, and I'm hard-pressed to remember what anyone else brought to the party. 30 friends crowded the red wall-to-wall carpet of our one-bedroom apartment. The festive anticipation of starting a new decade, the 1980s, still hung in the air. Kay, my roommate, and I moved in artist circles. More to Kay's credit than mine, as I already showed early symptoms of being a recluse. Despite the crush, even those of us who wore long skirts managed to maneuver without knocking over the candles that burned in cereal bowls on the floor. The magic of candle flames, long skirts, seven guitars complete with accomplished players, laughter, murmurs, and cheap wine made even me give up a good portion of my customary February gloom. Several men courted me all at once. Even Toby, nobly invited after I had recently conceded him the glory of rejecting me, seemed confused. Was there something to me after all? He sat with me at length instead of treating me with his special brand of benevolent disdain. I recited a few poems, sang with the singers, and kept bringing my eyes back to Audrey's painting of a mystical green dragon. Did Audrey watch me stare at her dragon, which hung over a collection of rejection slips Kay and I used as world-defying wall decoration? I couldn't tell, but just in case, I did my best to look intrigued, intelligent. A misty blue planet floated on a background of swirling black paint. From this planet, the dragon burst forth into the universe, crossed the entire canvas, and tried to transcend the canvas's borders into our space. Its left paw, or claw, or whatever it is that dragons have, reached out in a tentative gesture, groping to fly out with those enormous wings, despite being mythical, despite being trapped there on canvas. Later, Audrey told me the dragon's name, Serena. And I want to read just one more paragraph that tells about my reaction to Audrey, or the narrator's reaction to Audrey. Audrey felt so safe to me, a woman, so I need not, could not fall in love, since, after all, I was a woman too. Also, she had to be at least 10 years older than I was, 23, in fact, as I learned later on. Most of all, she felt safe because I recognized the familiar sadness filtered through the joy gloss of her impossible eyes.
Thank you, Beate. Mm. It's beautiful.
Yes.
Will you tell us just a little bit about your life here in Silver City? I know that you love nature so much, and I also know that you're a fantastic dancer. And both of those are part of your history. So if you'd like to tell us a little bit, maybe about the dancing.
Well, the dancing tonight, there's going to be this dance at the Toad that is called a German sparkle dance. And I have checked out some music that's also called German sparkle dance, and it's not exactly what I would have in mind, but I think I'll probably go and see anyway, since I'm German and I can put on some sparkles, and we will see how that goes. I love dancing. I spent about 20 years learning ballroom dance, and the last 10 of those I spent competing as a professional. I was not a very outstanding professional. If you see the Dancing with the Stars competition, I wasn't quite on that level, but I was there, and I was professional, and I was dancing, and it was beautiful. I love dancing. Mm-hmm. In Silver City, unfortunately, I don't have a partner, except from time to time I get to dance with Rico. So here it's more like freestyle dancing. But the thing I love about Silver City is that we don't have this horrible convention that we have in every other city that I've ever lived in, where you have to wait for a man to ask you to dance. Here, if you want to get up and you dance by yourself, then you do that, and nobody is astonished.
No, right.
Not even.
There's a large group of women that do that, and men too, mm-hmm. although mm-hmm. I'd say more women. But mm-hmm. it's a wonderful thing. Much freedom.
I think it is. It is a wonderful thing. At least one does get to dance.
Yes. Yes. And when you were growing up in Germany, what was that like for you? I know you grew up in Nuremberg. And it's a very special city,
It was tough because I grew up, you know, it was a fairy tale city, and I lived close to the castle, where I, in fact, went and started scribbling my first little stories and things. Actually, I was rewriting a play of a fairy tale. But we would go and take the tram. We didn't have a car or anything like that, but we'd take the tram to outside of the city, and we'd walk around among these wonderful monuments, and it was just on Sunday afternoons, and there was like a family outing, and it was just beautiful, you know. And one time we met an old shepherd with sheep, and he had this big old cloak on, and it was just magical. And then, of course, I found out that those were Hitler's parade grounds that we had been visiting in the afternoon. And by then I had learned some history in school, and it was just devastating to me. It was just, I never felt comfortable being German. it's still hanging over me. So growing up was kind of, at the same time also, I already loved literature. I loved fairy tales. I loved Shakespeare in German translation, incidentally. I loved all of those things. But the contemporary German literature was extremely dark, extremely guilt-ridden, extremely dark. And that atmosphere just really was heavy on me. So when I got a chance to go to the United States, I went.
We're glad.
I am too. Although, you know, then after a while with the politics that are going on here, one kind of sometimes, you know, wonders. I had one professor in college. He says he's Hungarian. You know.
Yes.
It can be pretty dark here too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wanted to get back to this concept of writing in a woman's voice, not being mm-hmm. a woman. I want to understand it better. And you've talked about how you're trying to move your writing away from the philosophical and the academic toward the vivid, the passionate, the emotional weather that are inside your characters and your poetry. And I wonder if you could talk about that. I mean, do you see that as a component of women's writing in general, that it's a more emotional landscape than you would normally be taught in writing workshops or schools that are taught by men?
You know, I think the emotional part is a big part of it. Now, when I'm thinking about how I first wanted to be a poet, I wanted to just have beauty, you know. I wanted to have crystals and wonderful colors and sunrises and all of that stuff. And then with the education I got, more and more I was herded, you know, don't be sentimental, don't go there, don't be caught being too emotional. And I think in my heart I want to go back to the emotions and to the beauty of things and to the wonder of things. But at the same time, we live in a world that has a lot of conflict in it, that has a lot of darkness in it. And I struggle with that, and part of my trying to find a woman's voice is trying to find exactly how to approach that. The other day I was thinking, you know, I want to live in a world where I'm grateful for everything that is there. I don't want to constantly complain. But then it came to me, maybe part of gratitude is not just eating the meal and washing the dishes, but also identifying and taking out the trash. And there has to be some part of that in there, given the world that we live in.
Right, finding the tone. I understand that we're using to express how we feel about the world, because you can't really leave any part of it out. It always is
right.
The dark and the light, and how to express what you want to say within that is always a challenge. Would you read us one more of your poems, Beate?
I want to read a poem from a small collection that I'm currently looking for a publisher. It's a chapbook length, and I'm not sure how successful I'll be finding something. It's called 13 Love Poems and 12 Songs of Despair. If you've read Pablo Neruda, you might recognize that he had 20 love poems and one song of despair. For women, it's more difficult. We have more despair. The 13th love poem, it's the last poem in there, and it's called After the Forest. The pamphlet is written in the voice of a woman in love with a man, but we are in a patriarchally challenged world, so there are these 12 places of despair. After the Forest. The moon is waning again. the past is done. The future can unfold. I will meet you at the crossroad as agreed. I hope you are well, my love. I yearn for walking together again. Once, as a wedding gift, I wanted to give you a language of joy. I couldn't finish in time. It was too dark in the forest. The waterfall was lovely, though, and our vows took place in silence anyway. They couldn't compete with the roar of wild water, neither in beauty nor in power. Your threads go one way, mine another now. Colors mingle. Let us start climbing. Should we fall, I pray, the weave will catch us. Today, I do not want to change the world. I want to be with it as is. Everything is possible. If you were to invite me to the river now, I would come.
Thank you, Beate. I want to thank you for being with us today. It's just a pleasure to have you. Always learn from you whenever we speak together. I really appreciate what you have to say and what you give through your writing. And thank you, Rico.
I'm happy to be here.
We'll see you next week.